Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The National Veterans Memorial and Museum, situated along the Scioto River in downtown Columbus, has garnered national recognition from Architectural Digest. The magazine named the $75 million structure the best designed building in Ohio for how its designers blended architecture and landscape to both alter and complement the city skyline. We're talking about what makes good design today, and we'll start with the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. Nancy Ritchie is a former two-term president and honorary trustee of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. She coordinates the James B. Ritchie Design Award, which honors excellence in urban design, and she joins us here. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Chelsea Grassinger is a principal at the Portland, Oregon-based design firm Allied Works, which conceived the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. She joins us by phone. Welcome, Chelsea Grassinger.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
What is the process like, Chelsea, for conceiving such a structure?
For all of our work, we approach all projects without any preconceived notions. Every project that we do is really informed primarily by the site and by the user and the intent for the space. And so with this project in particular, we had this amazing 7-acre site along the Scioto River that part of this downtown revitalization of the peninsula, which meant that the project would become somewhat of a pavilion in the park. So that had a big impact on the form of the building, and then the nature of the project as a veterans memorial was really profound and moving. So using that sort of weight and honor to inform a structure that communicated both strength and power, but also its connection to nature and sort of a fluidity and ability to have people feel protected and honored.
How, when you as a design firm apply to get the job, how do you do that?
Well, in this case, because of the nature of the project and those involved, this was an international competition. So we submitted our qualifications, which got us to a point where then we were one of a handful of international architects who then submitted a design and interviewed for the project.
And then how does the process, say, differ from designing an office building?
Again, I think the nature of the institution, office buildings are more commonplace, obviously, within our cities. The National Veterans Memorial Museum comes with, quite a bit of heavy lifting relative to a design. It's important that the design be iconic, that the design really deliver the mission of the institution, and that mission being one of honor and service, inspiration, remembrance. So providing something that can stand up to the mission of the institution and provide a place of beauty and memory.
The functions are different for something like the Veterans Memorial versus an office building, but you still have functions you have to fulfill.
For sure. The Veterans Memorial Museum does actually house the administration offices as well. So there is a variety of functions. There's classrooms, there's the back of the house and support spaces that come with a museum, which are very critical to the performance of a museum. There's very significant and specific conditioning requirements that come, and so with that become special mechanical systems to ensure that artifacts are well protected. So there is a lot that goes into the project that isn't maybe as poetic as one would assume, but goes hand in hand with delivering an operational building.
You know, Nancy Ritchie, it's a sort of building, you see it, it is iconic. You don't have to even go in it to get something from it, and that matters.
It does matter. And Chelsea, congratulations. Everything that you talked about, thinking about in designing this building, I think you've really accomplished. It's setting along the riverfront. It is an iconic building. It has a very, I'd say, a very simple but very elegant form that you can appreciate it from across the river or walking by. But I think also it has a dignity to it, and that idea that it is a memorial, it has to stand the test of time. And this building and this setting I think, has the potential to be a much-loved building for many years, not just something that we're excited about today. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge was, when you talked about an institution, Chelsea, the institution didn't even exist in Columbus. So not only did we get a really beautiful, new, iconic building, we got a very important new institution, which is something that we really need to celebrate.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. The Veterans Memorial and Museum in downtown, National Veterans Memorial and Museum in downtown Columbus, opened last October. It's garnered national recognition from Architectural Digest, which named the $75 million structure the best designed building in Ohio for how its designers blended architecture and landscape to alter the city skyline, but also complement it. If you have a question or comment, we have with us, Chelsea Grassinger. She's a principal at the Portland, Oregon-based design firm Allied Works, which conceived the design. Also with us, Nancy Ritchie. She coordinates the James B. Ritchie Design Award, which honors excellence in urban design. And she's also a former two-term president and honorary trustee of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. If you have a question or comment about the design of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Chelsea Grassinger, talk about, you know, you also worked with a landscape design firm, which is part and parcel of this. It's obvious, you know, they're very closely integrated, at least on the outside of the building. Tell us about why that became part of the design in this case.
Well, it really came from the original vision for the project, which, again, was to site this building within a 7-acre revitalized park along the river. So our work with Olin and their team was very integrated in the design of the building. One of the initial inspirations for the project was to create the rooftop sanctuary space connected to the sidewalk through the processional. Mm-hmm. And achieving that ramp at a slope that was accommodating to all abilities was very technical and really informed the siting and the position of the building within the landscape. So the integration of that ramp, the location of the building, how you arrive, the entry, all of that was worked through very carefully with the landscape architecture team.
It couldn't be more different than the building that it replaced, Nancy Ritchie. What are your thoughts about that? There was a lot of controversy about taking away the Vets Memorial Auditorium.
There was. That was more of a mid-century building. I remember my father being very offended. I don't think he understood at the time it was being replaced by something that was going to be a National Veterans Memorial. But that type of building, Memorial Hall, that the county owns, where COSI used to be, that used to be a way, a public gathering space, an auditorium. That was a very typical way of creating memorials, war memorials in the past. And, you know, I think for a product of its time, it worked very well. I remember very many concerts and Kenley Players, mm-hmm. and it was a heavily used building.
Yeah, right.
It was, yeah, it became part of what we had as part of our cityscape. You know, I think the loss of a building and replacement of a building is always something preservationists talk about and think about. And one of the interesting things, being involved with the Columbus Landmarks Foundation for so long, is that an organization that formed in 1977 was committed not just to preservation, but quality new design. And I think on balance, the replacement is something that is very much a product of our time. But I think it has a lasting design. And the fact that it is still a memorial, I think, is very important. I think had Vets Memorial been torn down and there was nothing to replace, it had become a commercial development, I think mm-hmm. that would have been an unfortunate thing. This is a really important site in the city, and I think it was done very well. I'm really excited that we have something of this quality on the riverfront.
So many new memorials that I've come across in the country seem to embrace, Chelsea Grassinger, that more meditative piece, that it's not to look at statuary, but instead be in the present. It's can you talk a little bit about that trend and why we find it pleasing?
That's an interesting question. I would say that you know, the society that we live in today, we're constantly bombarded with information, with engagement, with just the chatter of everyday life. So I think in this day and age, it's even more and more important that we find spaces where we can sort of go inward and reflect and remember, and that quality in and of itself is critical to what we're serving with the National Veterans Memorial Museum. But I think to your question, we're probably seeing more of that these days because of sort of the society that we live in right now.
Yeah, Nancy Ritchie?
Yeah, I also think we're living with, many of us grew up with a generation of World War II veterans, which touched so many lives, so many people. So we know those stories. But I'm of an age, I'm a baby boomer, where I grew up during the Vietnam War, and then we had the Gulf War in Afghanistan. And there are a lot of veterans.
Now,
and
we've been at war for now 20 years.
We've been at
years,
war yeah. for a very long time. But more importantly, it's a volunteer military now, and I think it's really important that people who maybe don't have military members in their family really experience what we're talking about. And I think the idea of going through a museum, but also having time to really think about that sacrifice, think about what people do, the choices they make. They didn't have to make these choices. I think it's an important part of our society today to have us be in a situation where a memorial like this is being built that really encourages that kind of contemplation and thoughtful reflection on what is being presented as part of the interpretive part of the museum.
You know, Chelsea Grassinger, the award was in part, it's about how the structure alters the city skyline. And I know that there was another controversy many years ago when they built the convention center, which I actually really like because it did alter the skyline. And I like that. I like the contrast. Why? What's important about that? What are you looking for in that case?
We're looking to create something that is iconic, that is...
Sets apart,
yeah. And again, the building is unique and it has a certain power in its sort of presence. But it's also, we took a lot of care to nestle it into the site, that it wanted to be proportionally respond to the landscape. It wanted to proportionally sit as a sort of forefront or forecourt to the city. We wanted the experience within the sanctuary to connect one back to the city. So it's definitely evolving the Columbus skyline, one might say, but it's what we took a lot of care to integrate it in a way that was also responsive and appropriate.
It seems like, Nancy Ritchie, that there was a controversy revolving around the convention center because, of course, they took out the railroads, you know, the station, and that was
yes,
a whole
thing.
In fact, that's when your organization was founded in that
yes,
way.
That's true. It was a Daniel Burnham designed station, and for anybody who's studied architectural history, Daniel Burnham was one of the giants of American architecture. That is one of the designs in Columbus. The other's the Wyandotte Building on Broad Street that people may not realize. Part of that controversy centered around the fact that Battelle Commons Company at the time that was undertaking the development of the station, the development of the convention center, was trying to look for a way, or at least had told people they were trying to look for a way to incorporate the arcade. The station was actually set back several hundred feet from High Street, and that was pretty much given up. But to incorporate the arcade that was along High Street, and some of us, including me in Columbus, remember the demolition started on a Friday night, on a Friday night. By the time a temporary restraining order was obtained, only the arch was left. And my husband and I, we like to say our romance started over the preservation of Union Station Arch some 40 plus years ago.
Which is now at rest
yes.
beautifully in the Arena District.
Yes. And it's become, actually, it has become an iconic feature, sculptural as opposed to being a building. But I'm always amazed by how much advertising and how many wedding photos and how many events take place with that as a backdrop. So it's an important important part of our heritage. And, you know, that's it's kind of the idea that we want some of our past. We're an evolving city. It's exciting to be in a city that's developing and that investment's being made, but we don't want to lose sight of those aspects of the past that make Columbus unique. We don't want to look like every other city everywhere. And I think that's where design really can make a difference in how a city stands out.
Chelsea Gressinger, there is another aspect of this, as we've mentioned, and that is the landscape is so unusual with this. Why was it important to bring in the outdoors in that way?
Well, the sanctuary space, the outdoor rooftop space, was one of the initial ideas that we were serving from the beginning.
Okay.
The connection for visitors connecting back to the city, connecting to the sky, creating that sort of personal sort of oneness and space for reflection. But again, integrating the form into the landscape, mm-hmm. Integrating the connections to the public and to the sidewalk, the landscape space behind was also a space meant for reflection and contemplation. So it was all very integral from the beginning that these things be united, and the idea that the building is sort of rising from the landscape,
yeah.
that we were serving early on, and that's partly where the use of the cast in place concrete came from, and sort of the robustness of the concentric bands of structure.
Well, Chelsea Gressinger, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Chelsea Gressinger is a principal at the Portland, Oregon-based design firm Allied Works, which conceived the National Veterans Memorial and Museum along the Scioto River in downtown Columbus. It has garnered national recognition from Architectural Digest, which named it the best building design in the state of Ohio. So we'll have a link to an article about that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And we're going to continue to talk about what makes great design, how it manifests in different ways in different cities and different times. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Architectural Digest has named the newly opened National Veterans Memorial and Museum in downtown Columbus the best designed building in Ohio. We're talking about what makes good building design. Still with us from the Columbus Landmarks Foundation and coordinator of the James B. Ritchie Design Award for Excellence in Urban Design, Nancy Ritchie. Thanks again, Nancy, for joining us.
Thank you.
Also, Tim Lai is an award-winning architect and principal at Architecture Studio in Columbus. He joins us. Welcome, Tim Lai.
Oh, hi.
Did I get that name right?
My firm's name is just Tim Lai Architect.
Okay. Tim Lai Architect. Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Todd Gannon is professor of architecture at the Austin E. Knowlton School of Architecture at Ohio State. He joins us as well. Welcome, Todd Gannon.
Great to be here.
All right, so let's just start out with what makes good design. Is that one of the first conversations you have in class, for instance?
It's not.
Okay.
And I think part of the reason why is because it's a very difficult thing to define. I think design has to do two things. You know, design is something that brings order to our lives. And in that sense, it's something that you don't notice when it's good. And at the same time, design, you want to kind of enrich your lives, to kind of propel the public imagination. And that's when you want to pay attention to it. And I think one of the things that we do at school is to try to make sure that the students understand the difference, that sometimes design operates best when it's under the radar, and that sometimes design operates best when it's consuming your attention.
Okay. And how do you know? Do you agree, Tim? I mean,
I think to a large degree, I think so. You know, obviously, as a practitioner, you know, I do have to think about that quite a bit, because people hire you because they think that you can create a good design for them, and you want to be able to kind of articulate that vision. So, you know, we do think about that issue quite a bit. You know, I think, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, everyone heard about the phrase form follows function, which is coined by Louis Sullivan back in like 100 and some years ago. And so obviously there's forms and there's functions, and, you know, start with the purpose. But I think a lot of times, especially when you talk about a building, especially in a civic scale, you know, I think a lot of times it's really about, you know, how's the design grounded in the location and the history of the place that really create meanings, right? Because meaning's really about, you know, it's about story that we tell each other and emotion, you know, that's in the story. And I think, you know, and building that started there, I think can have a lot of impact to how people experience it eventually.
Nancy Rizzi?
Yes. I agree with both Todd and Tim. I think a lot of it has to do with context. Clearly, with the National Veterans Memorial, it was designed to be an iconic building, but we don't want a city of all iconic buildings. And I think, Todd, what you said, mm-hmm. under the radar, the context, if you're building in a neighborhood or you're building in a historic district or you're building something, you want to be mindful of the context and what's appropriate. And I think it's difficult to describe what good design is. I think there are characteristics of good design. Some of it's in the eye of the beholder. With a design award program, we're always struggling with, you know, what criteria do you use and how do you interpret them? So I think the situations can be different depending on the type of building and where it's located. And I love what you said about the community around it and adding to it. I think that's an important part of it.
Yeah, it both compliments and stands out depending on what the purpose is. That's what they're saying about the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. It complements it and it contrasts with it. It doesn't blend into it. It stands out. If we are talking about what makes good design today, in light of the award or the recognition by Architectural Digest of the National Veterans Memorial and Museum in downtown Columbus. They've named it the best designed building in Ohio. If you have a question or comment, what do you think great design looks like or feels like? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Todd Gannon, how does our sensibilities about design, how has it changed over time?
Well, I think like many of the questions, many of these kinds of questions, I think that's going to depend very much who you ask. Uh-huh. I think people have very different expectations about what they want out of design. I mean, I think a story we tell around school kind of often is that, you know, a lot of times people expect architecture, for instance, to operate like dentistry.
How so?
If I've got a tooth here, and I've got a tooth here, and I have nothing in between, I expect another tooth that is more or less the same as the teeth next to it. And that would be one version of the architecture kind of sliding in and receding.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, certainly at Ohio State, at the Knowlton School, we are very interested in standing out as opposed to blending in. And so I think one of the important things about design culture today is understanding the diversity of architectural forms, the diversity of possibilities that are out there. So when you see a building like the Memorial or like the Wexner Center, you understand it not as an affront to that kind of dental continuity, but rather as an opportunity to encourage a community to think differently, to imagine alternatives as opposed to rush to a kind of conformity.
Yeah, Tim, why?
Yeah, so, you know, I think Todd is right in the sense that there's always a balance, right, between creating something new and contrasting to what is, you know, what it comes before and how do you fit in that would makes it appropriate. You know, I mean, like the Western Center is a good example. I think Western Center is probably one of my favorite buildings in Columbus. And it does just that, that it's definitely a very contrasting building that was sliding in, you know, in a historic building at the back, has no facade, has no elevation. You can't even know. Sometimes you don't even know how to get in if you haven't been there before. Have you been to the Western Center? You've been,
yes,
right?
Of course.
Yeah. So it's hard to find the entrance sometimes, right? And you know, so that's one way to do it. But it actually addressed some of the issue that if you understand that it's actually appropriate in its own way. And I think one of the important things is also to just think about, you know, how to help the public to appreciate and understand buildings and architecture. Because a lot of times, you know, I would say a lot of people don't really understand architecture the way that architects and, you know, and educator, you know, understand architecture. They go for the very obvious things. Oh, what the building look like, right? You know, there's like something that they know about as an object. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other subtlety and a lot of consideration in it that if they can think about those things, they it makes the experience that much richer.
Hmm. And Nancy Ritchie, what do you think? I mean, looking back over history.
Yeah, I might have somewhat of a contrarian view here. I do believe there is a time and a place for what is different, but I would certainly not want to be in a place where every building you have to look for the entrance or can't figure out how to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
That's a bummer.
It's maybe look like a tooth, but sometimes a smile can not work. You know, they all have to work together to have a nice smile. And I think that's the challenge for architecture. I think that's the challenge for the people building buildings, whether it's a developer or a civic building or a nonprofit. But I think the quality of materials, I think the quality of the design, I think the context are all very important. And those are the kind of criteria we use in the design award program, the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. It's, you know, it can be new. It could be an addition to a building. It could be an adaptive use. It could be a preservation. I think all of those situations, the solution would be very different. So you can't, you know, use a 1 to 10 rating and say everything gets, you know, a certain rating, it's good or bad. I think there are degrees and nuances in design.
I was just giving somebody a tour of the downtown, which included the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. And we were down by where the new county courthouse is. And there's a road, the street right behind it. I can't place the street right now, but there was a little tiny brick building that was there by itself with some parking lots and some gravel, just nothing. And now they've put up two huge structures right next
to it. Wrapped around it.
Yeah. Wrapped around it, and it's there. And it looks like something out of, like, you know, Batteries Not Included or something, right? Am I wrong? But it was sort of touching, too. I kind of liked it, Tim Lai. You know exactly what
I know
I'm talking
exactly
about.
I drive by it every day. It's a
I
strange,
think it was a holdout.
It's a strange, yeah. It's a strange way that they couldn't make a deal to have that building be included in the new development.
On the other hand, it gives you a sense of the scale of the city and how it was historically. I mean, that's
right.
Downtown Columbus was filled with buildings that size. You know,
right.
The Levesque Tower broke the mold.
yeah. Exactly. Let's see, Amy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Amy.
Hi. I'm calling in as an artist, art educator, and also an environmentalist. And I'm wondering how much architecture, particularly School of Architecture at Ohio State and others, are concerned about what's going on with the environment. And I'd like to say that if you are leaders, that we should be looking at the all of the abandoned shopping centers in and around the city, and our footprint is heavy, and is ultimately causing flooding, And, you know, are you addressing those issues, you know, as leaders, as I believe architects should be? What are you doing about that?
Environment, yeah. Ty Gannon.
Well, I think that's it's a crucial concern. One of the things about building construction is that it requires a lot of energy. Its carbon footprint is pretty massive. And we need to take very seriously the environmental impact of the kind of work that we do. And I think projects that use adaptive reuse, find new uses for existing buildings, we have to do it. I mean, if we cannot afford as a species to continue to, you know, to just plow down buildings and build new ones. And so I think the idea that we could find ways to use existing buildings more efficiently and to produce a kind of excitement. I'll give an example, a couple of examples from the campus. I think the Pomerine Hall, which was just finished by Acock Associates Architects.
Beautiful.
Really fantastic reuse of an existing building that had kind of fallen into, kind of fallen off the map of the university. And George and his team were able to bring that back to life in a really fantastic way. I think the work that was done on the Thompson Library, very similar, you know. So I think that these kinds of concerns are crucial. We spend quite a bit of time talking about these things. It's at a very high level. So our graduate students just that finished up just this past month, the theme that they were working with as they finished their master project work had to do with how architecture intersects with the idea of the Anthropocene. You know, how does the scale of a human person, of a human being, intersect with the scale of the planet, with the scale, how do we begin to understand that design is much bigger than individual people, that when we have to mine iron ore, move it all around the world to build a building, I mean, that's a big deal, and we need to pay a lot more attention to how those kinds of processes impact the work that we do. So it's very much a concern for us at the Knowlton School.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I think everyone is concerned about the environment, especially for architect. The challenge is that there's no one-size-fits-all solution. Such a complex problem as simple as adaptive reuse, for example, right? Like, we talk about adaptive reuse because, you know, building, you know, take a lot of energy, take a lot of material to build something. We don't want to just take it down and waste all those energy, right? But at the same time, when you rehab a building, those buildings are built a long time ago. You know, the energy, you know, standard was very different back then. There's no insulation a lot of times. Mm. So you create a building that you adaptive reuse it, very expensive to do, and you don't get more square footage because the structure is always going to be that big. And you're going to need to use a lot more energy to actually operate the building a lot of times, right? Or you would have to completely change the appearance of the building to add insulations and make it more, you know, energy efficient. And so it's not that simple. You know, sometimes it might be better to take down the building and build something very energy efficient and more density, provide more density, you know, for an urban environment.
And it's a balance in
Nancy,
Ritchie, to decide when to do that.
There is. Among preservationists, we say the greenest building is the one that's already built. And I think to what Tim's saying, I think there are aspects of older buildings that maybe are not as energy efficient. But studies have shown the least energy efficient buildings in this country are built from the post-war period to about the year 2000, when energy was cheap. You didn't open windows. You didn't use, you know, any natural light, all of those things. So I think it's a balance. Fortunately, there are incentives provided for the rehabilitation of historic buildings, income-producing buildings, that has made a huge difference because those tax credits help offset some of the additional costs that might be involved in rehabilitation of historic structures. But I'm always amazed by a culture that we recycle
water bottles and we recycle tin cans, but recycling buildings, Americans tend to want something new all the time. And recycling buildings is a really smart, energy efficient, environmentally conscious thing to do.
Yeah, Ty Gannon?
Well, I think this is this is, again, one of those issues about the two sides of design. I mean, what we're talking about now is designing responsibly. You know, and that is absolutely crucial to do. And when, you know, that having a sense of the of responsibility to the community, responsibility to the environment, responsibility to the stakeholders. I mean, there are a lot of people who have a stake in the preservation of existing buildings, the construction of new buildings. And so how we pay very careful attention to architecture and design as a as carrying significant social responsibilities is crucial. There is also one of architecture's responsibilities, I think, is to operate as an art form. And one of the reason that we're so excited to preserve buildings that exist in the world today is because of their artistic value. You know, and we're willing to pay fairly significant efficiency prices and operational prices in order to keep a really great old building. And that's because that building was such, in most cases, because that building was such an important piece of its time. And I believe that we have to take that responsibility of architecture as an art form as seriously today. So when we build a new building like the Veterans Memorial or like the Knowlton School building, Knowlton Hall, which we built 15 years ago, you know, those buildings are also of their time, and they're in their difference from what, from the context that they're in. That's really how they become those kind of artistic
statements
and, of the moment.
That is Todd Gannon. He's Ohio State University professor and section head for architecture at the Austin E. Knowlton School of Architecture. Also with us, Nancy Ritchie, former two-term president and honorary trustee of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. And also with us, Tim Lai. He's founder and principal of Tim Lai Architect Architecture Studio. We are talking about what makes good design. If you have a question or comment about that topic, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Architectural Digest has named the newly opened National Veterans Memorial and Museum along the Scioto River in downtown Columbus the best designed building in Ohio. So we're talking about what makes good design of architecture today. Still with us, two-term president and honorary trustee of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation and coordinator of the James B. Ritchie Design Award for Excellence in Urban Design, and that is now open for nominations. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Nancy Ritchie, thanks again, Nancy, for joining us. Also award-winning architect and principal at Tim Lai Architect Architecture Studio in Columbus. Tim Lai, thanks again.
Good to be here.
And from the Knowlton School of Architecture at Ohio State, Professor Todd Gannon. Thanks again. How much, you know, getting back to that environmental piece, how much does that, how do you measure, how do you weight environmental issues in design today? Is it, can you really separate it at this point?
You know, in some ways, I feel it's kind of like structure or infrastructure. I mean, it's something that you just have to do. I mean, if you don't, the structure of a building, you know, the beams and columns that hold it up are not always the main part of the conversation when you talk about a building. But if you get it wrong, you're in big trouble. And I think with these kinds of sustainability issues are the same. There's just something that they're a little bit newer to the table, but they have to be as automatic as building structure.
Is it something that a client's typically going to ask you about, Tim?
Well, I think, you know, obviously in the U.S., we have the LEED standard that is an environmental, basically a scoring standard, levels that you can actually achieve different levels of LEED certification. And so, for example, Ohio State or a lot of public projects, they mandate those environmental design in the project.
Bryant in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Bryant.
Hello. Hello. I've been a resident of Columbus my whole life, and I've used to do architectural drafting for numerous architects, Moody Nolan, Bowman BBJ is an example. But I'm also a preservationist, and I wish certain buildings such as Union Station could have been saved back in the day. But I've noticed where architecture, it seems like it goes through kind of like a trendy thing. You can, before the Short North was renovated, you could go down High Street and see the old buildings that were built like in the 1800s, but then you could see on the first level where there's a renovation, you know, new mm-hmm. storefronts, awnings, the whole first level changed where the upper levels retained the older building. Now I see where there's a lot of glass and chrome. And to me, it seems like it's kind of like a cold feeling, not really an inviting feeling.
Are you talking about like in the Short North, for instance, or?
Yeah, and just the normal, like there was a big craze on deconstructionism where you could see, you walk into a building and you could see all the heating ducts and the electricity and the piping and stuff like that. And then that takes off and then everybody kind of like goes nuts with that. I kind of like favor a community similar to like Worthington where buildings are built, but then there's a certain style that has to be
Or like in New Albany, that kind of thing where I get lost when I go to New Albany. I can't figure out where I'm at. But I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, Bryant. I mean, you know, there is a question then about, you know, the dentistry piece of that where you're fitting a tooth into a jawline and making it look like it belongs there. But Nancy Ritchie, what about what Bryant's saying?
I think buildings change over time. And I think that change becomes part of that, you know, evolution of changes of use or changes of material. And I think it can be done well, or maybe it's not done well in some cases. But I think that it's okay. I mean, that's happened for centuries and millennia. That
preservation
change
doesn't
over
mean
time.
No change.
Preservation does not mean you never change anything. It doesn't mean that you're stuck in time. We like to say historic preservation is managing change, and managing change with a respect for what you have, but also being very much a part of the present and the future. I don't think they're mutually exclusive at all. And I think the challenge for designers, I'm an architectural historian and preservationist, not a designer. I think the challenge is how to do that and with respect, but also with creativity.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that cities are basically living organisms. Mm-hmm. They change over time. They develop in all kinds of interesting ways. And something that happens, particularly in the design community, and the callers touched upon this a little bit, is that there is a fashion element to it. Things become popular or trendy, and designers, some of them talented, some of them less so, take up these kinds of trends. And I encourage that. I think I'd rather have more innovation and risk-taking than we currently do in the Columbus market in particular. And the reason I say that is because the design has a tendency, because it takes a long time, because it lasts a long time, architecture is always in danger of succumbing to a kind of cliched existence that you become numb, like, to all the brick in the city. I mean, I think Columbus mm-hmm. is kind of full up on brick at this point. I'd like to see more materials. Not that I have anything particularly against brick, but I feel like there are so many more opportunities.
Well, that's why the convention center, I just loved it. You know, I thought, it was just a breath of fresh air. It was something new and different, even though it sadly replaced Union Station. You know, that said,
it would be surprising to people to know that the
Union State, or I'm sorry, the Convention Center actually won the James B. Ritchie Design Award given by the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. Uh-huh. So I think that people are surprised by that kind of thing. So did Thompson Library.
Yeah, I don't find either of those surprising at all.
But for people think of preservation as right. not
and it's
wanting
so different.
Change.
It was such a departure exactly. from what we usually see. I wanted to ask you three, too, about something else that a lot of architects, I imagine, have been talking about, and that is the restoration / new, you know, rethinking of the Notre Dame Cathedral
yes.
in Paris. When I had a show about that a month ago or so, or whenever it happened, it was really interesting to talk to a designer about thinking about that when the cathedral was first, you know, it's in its many. There's been many iterations. It's been burned down before. It's been destroyed before, and that kind of a thing. But when they built it, it was in an era when they planned to have added on to it. They never was designed to be exactly that building for the rest of time. And I wondered what you think about it. You know, they're mulling the recovery of the structure and thinking about changing it to fit what Paris is like now and what people are like now. What do you, is something as iconic as Notre Dame, what do you think?
Well, that's a tough one.
It's fascinating though, when you think about how it was intended to be changed.
Yes, but it was also done in a vocabulary that people understood over centuries. It did change, but it didn't change so radically that it was unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm.
I think the loss of the entire roof
yeah.
of that building and how quickly that happened was just absolutely shocking. What I heard immediately after was the idea of redesigning the spire. And the spire was a 19th century addition by Viollet-le-Duc, who was a 19th century French architect. The idea of designing a new spire that kind of marks this point in time, I think, is a really interesting idea. I did see in the New York Times some other alternatives
yeah.
that, you know, put
an
urban farm
yeah.
on the roof.
Yeah.
And I think the idea of this as a sacred building, mm-hmm. as an iconic building, I think that would be a very trendy, very unfortunate thing. I think the idea of redesigning the spire and having an international competition could be very, very interesting.
Yeah, Tim,
I mean that kind of reminds, you know, not the same, it's not the same thing, but I mean, think about in Paris, you know, at the Louvre, when they proposed to have the glass pyramid
right.
for the new entrance. I mean, that's such a controversial issue
by
IMP.
But everyone loves it.
But the
yeah.
scale of it was appropriate.
Well, yeah. Well, you think it's appropriate now, but I'm saying that
yeah. at the time.
It's not that obvious at
yeah.
that time.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Eiffel Tower, I'm sure that people yeah. hated it when they first proposed that. So I think every time when you think about these things, you have to think about history to think about, okay, what does it mean to be new? What this thing's going to mean to people 100 years from now, or even 50 years from now, right? It's very different. It's hard. I'm sure that there's always going to be people who want to keep things as it is, you know, especially things that have such a significant cultural identity to the French. Or even not just French, but I think for architecture in general, for Gothic architecture, is one of the earliest Gothic architecture. Now,
yeah.
like you said, it does change over time. And what is the appropriate change, right? I'm sure that every time it changed, I'm sure there's some debate going on. We just didn't
Which
forget about
is
that.
Healthy.
Yeah, and it's
Absolutely.
A healthy, and it's the yeah. will of, I think the you know, like Mies van der Rohe say that, you know, architecture is the will of the epoch of the time, right? Which is really, you know, we have to talk about it. I think it's good to actually have a discussion about what is appropriate,
yeah.
what is what we should be building.
I think what's important to remember is that all of these buildings that we become very attached to, they tended to be very innovative. These
of
things were
day,
incredibly
yeah.
Groundbreaking. And so whether you look at Notre Dame in the 11th century when it's going up, structurally daring in ways that we're just simply incapable of today. But then in the 19th century, Viollet takes incredible liberties with the way that he interprets his renovation and updating of the, you know, he invented a lot of what was lost was actually authored by Viollet and not by earlier Gothic craftsmen. And so I think, you know, the idea that Notre Dame continues to change and continues to evolve is important. It's just, A, you couldn't pick a point to
yeah.
take it back to. I mean, there is no original. One of the
exactly.
things we rely on this idea that there's an origin to which we can return, there just never is. Yeah. It's always a kind of evolving process. And I would encourage to continue innovating.
That is Todd Gannon, Ohio State University professor and section head for architecture at the Austin E. Knowlton School of Architecture. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Also with us, Tim Lai, an award-winning architect and principal and founder at Tim Lai Architect Architecture Studio. Thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And Nancy Ritchie, former two-term president and honorary trustee of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation. We will post a link to the fact that the nomination period is open for the award that she gives out every year. Nancy Ritchie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.